Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's Ecologic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today I'm joined by Kurt Johansson. He is a seasoned developer of sustainable communities. For 27 years, he has been the vice president of Triad Development. In his own words, he is advancing the art of finding balance between environmental protection, social responsibility, and economic prosperity. Happy to have Kurt on the podcast today. Hey, Kurt, welcome to the podcast. Great to meet you.
Well, thanks, Ted. Great to meet you as well.
And where are you sitting as we speak?
I'm sitting in the town of Tiburon, California, just a little north of San Francisco.
Very good. And have you been there for years? Is that home?
Moved to California from the East Coast about 40 years ago, and I've been in Marin County ever since.
You are one lucky guy. I think most of us would agree that is a fantastic place to have landed and to have stayed for that long. I've already introduced you and your role at Triad Development. What are you working on today, this week? What's hot?
So, the project has been under construction for about 4 years. And we struggled for the first couple of years through the pandemic, as you will imagine. Cities struggled mightily on their end to process permits and that sort of thing. So there was a loss of well over a year of time. But now we're picking up great momentum. So home building is well underway. All of our offsite infrastructure is in. A fire station, visitor center, all those types of amenities will be completed this year. And residents will be moving in November. So our first homeowners will actually be the lucky ones to be in the property. We still have
a lot. This is, just let me interrupt, because you dove right into it, which I guess you should be. This is your big project. This is the Lagoon Village project, right?
Yeah, the Lagoon Valley is a project that actually got originally approved by the city about 30 years ago. And it was a disaster. The plan was just wrong. I mean, it was one of those projects where you didn't need to be in the business to look at it and go, well, that's way too much development for that beautiful, pristine area. So we redid it all. And, I've been into conservation communities for a long time. So we repositioned it with a much smaller ecological footprint, preserved over 70% of the land as open space. And now it's become something pretty special that we're very proud of.
So Kurt, initially another developer had started this out and worked this project, and then you came along and as you pretty much retooled it to make it more appropriate for the site.
Yes, it was actually a Sacramento, California commercial developer who wanted to do huge office complex. And it didn't have any sensitivity to wildlife habitat out there or the open space connectivity. It just, and it didn't deal at all with climate resiliency. I mean, it just, things that are very important to me and have been for a long time. We had to reposition the project, and it took a while to get the city to understand what sustainable development is about and the priorities and principles that we believe so strongly in. But eventually they got it. And, now it's being built, and it's pretty fascinating to see it come to life.
And describe for our listeners, many of whom are not in California, where this is. It's Vacaville?
Yes.
Am I pronouncing that correct?
Yes. So Vacaville is a city of about 100,000 people. It's in one of the 9 Bay Area counties. It's in the north end of San Francisco Bay, roughly halfway between San Francisco and Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. And so when you talked about the sustainable development principles that are at the core of your work and your company's work, what are those?
Well, we use 5 major principles. We have some subsets of these, but the 5 most important ones are the preservation of open space. That's number one. Wildlife habitat, not only protection, but also enhancement. We believe in that very strongly. The second is community-supported agriculture. To us, it's important. You've heard the term agri-hoods, and there are a number of communities around that are starting to embrace community farms. We believe in that strongly, so we will have an organic farm within the community. The third is energy and water conservation, which should be everybody's concern. You know, both energy and water are so critical to future generations' ability to enjoy the wonderful lifestyles we've all enjoyed for a long time on this planet. And fourth is climate resiliency, that really addresses wildfire protection as well as flood protection, primarily for us. And then the last one is walkable live, work, play communities. And by live, work, play, I'm actually channeling Ebenezer Howard. I started in the industry, came in through civil engineering, but quickly moved into the development side of it because I found that much more fascinating. And did a lot of studying about progressive communities around the world, as well as the United States, so I could get educated by practitioners who were doing some really interesting things. I became very interested in Ebenezer Howard's work from about 100 years ago in the UK. He did, his planned cities really were live, work, play cities. And it's so interesting to me to apply that type of thinking to even smaller communities. So I'm not trying to build a city. They're just a community within a city. But those principles of keeping people out of their cars, giving them the amenities they need so they can walk and bike to the things that they most do. You can't keep cars off the road entirely, but when communities have a lot of those goods and services and amenities embedded within it, it sure helps a lot to reduce vehicle miles traveled.
It's fantastic. And I'm reminded about what my friend Ralph Torrey, who is a good friend and colleague up in Canada, has always said, that people don't need mobility. What they need is access. Right.
Yeah.
And so so you don't really need a car, you need access to whatever it is. I love the live, work, play. Let's talk about some of these fundamental tenets then. The number one was open spaces. And I think your parcel of land is 2,400 acres and you only have 200 with homes on them. Is that about right?
Close. Our specific plan is well over 2,000 acres. I think it's close to 2,400. And our footprint for the residential component is just a little over 200, about 230 acres. So it's very small, but there are other parts of the community. We do have a commercial component of about 45 acres. So we're trying to encourage businesses to actually be able to have their workers live close to where they work. We also have a lot of amenities. We have a lot of all the recreation, active and passive, that people really really want to enjoy. But the biggest part of that equation is the open space, where we've surrounded the community with hills that are forever protected. Those have been converted, conveyed to the city. The city controls that property. Mm. And trails are connected right to the neighborhoods, and the public gets to have access. And it's just, to us, it's really important that not only we preserve open space, but also make it publicly accessible.
Yeah. And so when somebody buys a home in Lagoon Valley, are they buying into that whole acreage?
Yeah, they actually will be paying to help maintain it too.
Yeah.
So they have access, but there's also maintenance of it. Yeah.
Okay. Number two, the CSA, the community supported agriculture. What are you going to grow there?
Well, fruits and vegetables. We're in a hot climate.
Yeah.
Vacaville is, I think, zone 9. It gets pretty warm in the summer. Get up in the high 90s, even 100 sometimes. But Solano County, which is the county in which Vacaville is located, is still very much an agricultural county. The north end of the San Francisco Bay Area still has agriculture. Napa County, of course, has been all converted to grapes for the wine industry. But Solano County still has quite a bit of produce being grown. And there's real interest in the restaurants to get fresh produce organically grown locally. We also like the idea, though, of it being a social glue for the community. When you have a farm stand and you have a box program where residents can come down and pick up their fruits and vegetables each week, or have them delivered, and then also have fruit stand that's open to the public so they can come and they can get fresh produce on a daily basis. We think that's important. I mean, I'm a big supporter of, you know, the farmers markets that happen once a week all over the place and all that sort of thing. It's very important. But we like the idea of this being a daily operation. Yep. And so we are in discussions with a number of nonprofits that love to run these types of facilities, and we have the land to do it. So we're not the experts, but we've set aside the land for it.
Okay, very, very exciting. I want to move there. energy. Let's talk energy. This is my thing. What are you doing in terms of energy conservation? You mentioned energy and water conservation.
So our home builders certainly are exceeding California standards for solar. There's a lot of solar. We're putting solar on pretty much everything. Even our visitor center has solar panels all over it. We believe in that strongly, but we also like the idea of battery storage. So we're encouraging our builders to put in battery storage in garages because long-term, that's going to be a good way to mitigate against the brownouts that, you know, we've all experienced over time. The water is where I really get excited, Ted. We are obligating our home builders to pre-design our homes for gray water recycling. And I'm a big supporter of the idea that, you know, because obviously, so especially in warm climates in California, you know, our yards take up half of our water demand. I mean, irrigation is, you know, to keep things growing. And so we can easily reclaim up to 200 gallons per day and have homeowners reuse that water for irrigation purposes to reduce the impact on potable. And one of the keys to that is pre-piping the homes so that you put a little package system outside in the yard and you just connect. Once a home is not pre-piped and it's built as a conventional home, it's very expensive to then try to retrofit that home to do that. So we're pretty excited. The home builders have bought into that concept. We also are using reclaimed water wherever we can. We've talked to the city quite a bit about using untreated water. And that's a discussion that's ongoing with them. Fortunately, Vacaville does have a good water supply. But we really like the idea of reclaimed.
Well, might that be for the golf course?
Yeah. So a requirement of the community was a golf course. I mean, decades ago, I built some, but, you know, I'm not really into that business anymore. But the city doesn't have one. I think they're probably the largest city of their size in California that doesn't have a golf course. So. Hmm. It's been an important thing for them. There's a lot of people there that have been waiting for it for a long time. So the idea of using raw water for the golf course is really important to us. We're not going to definitely not going to use treated water. So we're working on that. But now that you mentioned the golf course, this really leads into the climate resiliency issue, which is number two. We are in a valley that historically has had downstream flooding problems. The watershed area for Lagoon Valley is very large. So neither the state nor the local officials have ever really addressed it. And they've just sort of let the downstream properties suffer for a long, long time. So one of the things we used the golf course for, which I thought was really made me feel good about this, the golf course is actually preventing downstream flooding. We are putting in 156 acre feet of detention storage throughout the golf course. So the golf course serves as basically, it's the equivalent of 1.3 million bathtubs full of water that will actually be held in those basins and then slowly let out so that it prevents the downstream flooding. That's a feature that I've not seen done to this scale in a golf course before, but we're doing it. Robert Trent Jones is designing it for us, and he's very excited about it. And then the other feature that I'm excited about the golf course is for wildfire protection. Unlike many golf courses, ours, we have deliberately set it as a buffer from the open space to the community, so that there's irrigated setbacks 600-700 feet wide that help to buffer from wildfire. And so, yeah, the old model of putting a golf course with houses lined up on both sides of it all over the place, I told the city I would not do that, and they supported us. And so it now serves many purposes. There's one other thing about it that I'm excited about. We're going for Audubon Sanctuary certification on the golf course, which it's much like LEED. If you think of a LEED Platinum building, getting Audubon certification is a big deal, because we have so much wildlife habitat and it's all being protected. So the golf course really just sort of meanders through that. And I love the idea of us getting that certification. There's, I think, about 300 courses in the world that have it. And so that's pretty important for us. So that's climate resiliency and the...
Can I jump in? I want to ask, you've prompted so many questions, but how fantastic that you're using a golf course for so many other benefits other than just golfing.
Yeah.
Which is really great. And I presume that will be protecting lots of homes, not just your Lagoon Valley homes, but lots of homes downstream. So you've created a huge, having a golf course and then using the golf course in such clever ways have created a huge community benefit.
Yeah. We believe strongly in all projects should have a fire resiliency built into them. A golf course gives you the opportunity to actually do it on a very large scale. So we're taking advantage of that, but yes, we're very aware of, you know, it's a fact of life in California. We have to be aware.
Well, now how is it going? This just sounds so ideal to me. I'm sure you got pickleball courts also.
Yeah. Funny you should mention that. Yeah, we've set aside area for about 30 pickleball courts.
It's just, you know, that's what everybody's got to do now, and everybody's doing. But is it, do you have people signing up? Are people buying these homes at a clip?
Yeah. Well, there's about 4,000 people on an interest list that have been waiting for the first homes to be released. And that's just now happening. So it's the demand is very high. I mean, you know, we're in a housing crisis, and everybody knows that. I mean, the Bay Area has an acute housing crisis because we're out of land. And, you know, infill is the key. We have so much infill that we could be building on to help address the housing crisis. But, you know, it's hard to take advantage of that, because really wonderful developers I know in the industry that have good friends want to do infill. But it's so difficult, the regulatory process, the cost, and there's little help from cities to make those parcels be revitalized and repurposed. It just needs to ramp up. And that's, if you don't mind, I'm just going to plug for my nonprofit, the Council of Infill Builders. I've been the president for almost 15 years, and it's a wonderful organization of developers on our board that are practitioners that are doing infill. And the more of that we can do throughout California, the more it would help our housing shortage, instead of, you know, the old model of just going out and sprawling out in the middle of nowhere. We just can't do that. I devote a fair amount of my time to the council's work in Sacramento as well as statewide. To get more legislation to help.
That's fantastic. I don't want to minimize the importance of that, but I did want to get back to the supply and demand of housing of your type and this Lagoon Valley. It sounds, I mean, you have 2,000 acres of open space. You have a farm going on right there. You've got all the recreation, the golf recreation happening, a business community built into it. Are these premium? Are these priced very high, or is it? Does this model have to be only an affluent model, or can it be more broadly applied?
No, that's a fair question, Ted. One of the things that I feel very strongly about is socioeconomic diversity in communities. Yep. And we were able to persuade the city to allow us to actually include both affordable housing to blend with market rate housing, but also age qualified housing. So we even have what used to be called senior housing, but I think we now rarely refer to age qualified. So we have neighborhoods that are embedded within the overall community that will provide some of that socioeconomic diversity. And it's not in any way reducing the quality. So if you're buying a larger market rate home, and the neighborhood next door is, moderate income housing, the quality of the housing is just as high. There's no reason to not do it well. And so that's an important component for us, is that we do have that diversity. Having said that, there still is strong demand for homes that have yards. I mean, people like yards. They want some space around their house. And, while infill is really so important to do, that doesn't mean that in some cases you can't actually create in an infill site homes with yards. And so we have those, quite a bit of those, mm-hmm. as well, that people are very excited about, because, these are families that have been sitting for a long time waiting for new housing. And there's so little of it getting built in the Bay Area.
Such a deliberate process that you're going through. It's so interesting to hear about. What was it how did this come about? You said you grew up on the East Coast. What were the influences that got you to this point where you're focused on building sustainable communities?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. You're making me get nostalgic here. So
Have at it.
My upbringing in New York City and New England, as a kid, I dreamed of being an orchestra conductor one day. That was my dream. I wanted to conduct big orchestras. I was introduced to classical music at a very young age and really loved it, still love it. It's really one of my passions. But in a practical way, I ended up in the civil engineering business and then quickly moved into the land development business in my 20s. And then I relocated to California. It was eye-opening for me, some of the more progressive ideas that were going on out here. There's a lot of quaintness and really the stuff that I like about the East Coast. And, still I go back quite a bit. But California has always been the state where you can try some new things. I mean, there's been that spirit of innovation here. And especially when I ended up in Marin County, I started to understand that how we balance the built environment with the natural environment is so critical, not just for ourselves, but for future generations. And a lot of really, really talented people understood this long before I got here. And I've learned a lot from them. I also, Ted, took a couple of years to travel to see communities, progressive housing all over the world. I actually spent a lot of time in Europe looking at eco-villages, looking at co-housing. Mm-hmm. And, I learned a lot, because one of the unfortunate things is many people don't get the opportunity to travel and see what other people are doing. And there's wonderful ideas out there. There's such creativity in so many places that we could learn from. And I benefited from that. I pushed my way into people's offices to talk to some thought leaders that were just so influential in my life, that helped me. They explained things to me in the field of sustainable development that I'll never be able to repay the kindness that I got from people that I consider mentors, and their names you would know. And all of that affected me a lot. So when I came back and basically said, okay, it's not that I understand everything. I just have a better, I think I have a better perspective on how to apply this and get it to scale in the U.S. That led me to conservation communities. And conservation communities are sort of, for me, a next step in sustainability. We have a number of them throughout the United States. Two of the ones that I've been closely involved with that I'm the most impressed with are Prairie Crossing, which is just north of Chicago, and a community called Serenbe, which is just a little south of Atlanta. Those two are just their standouts for what they've been able to do. And I've borrowed ideas from both projects. I know the developers personally very well and spent a lot of time collaborating. You know, conservation to me is so important. And, you know, not everybody can think of it that way in terms of if you have a small piece of property, you don't have the ability to do conservation at the scale we're doing it. But there's no reason why cities can't be more aggressive about doing it from their perspective, which is taking some of this underutilized land and converting it to, you know, both passive and active recreation and open space. Because one of the things Europe has done a little bit better, most Northern Europe has done better than we have is a high percentage of open space within cities. The U.S. is not very good at that when we compare ourselves to Europe.
Good stuff. Final question. How do you keep balance? We've talked about your music, your passion for music. We've talked about the value of travel. I know you have to be super patient to do what you do. You know, there's a lot of hoops and hurdles we haven't talked about, and the decades that it takes to get some project like this, you know, at this point where it's at. But how do you keep balance, Kurt?
Yeah, well, I have three wonderful kids, all grown adults now. Two of them are not close, so I travel to visit them. One of them is still here in the Bay Area, which I'm happy about. But, you know, I think you brought up the topic of patience. When I was much younger, that wasn't one of my strengths. I remember, you know, trying to be persuasive, trying to convey vision to people that weren't particularly open to it. And I would get a little frustrated that it wasn't happening fast enough. In a funny sort of way, my age now has helped me to get more patient with that. I'm not sure if that happens to a lot of other people, but for me, it actually has given me better perspective on why it takes people as long as it does to actually shift, right? Yeah. Change is scary for people. It just is, right? And even if it's good change, it's scary. And part of the reason for that is a lot of change isn't good. Right. It's that's what people focus on is, oh, this is going to be bad. And so when you're trying to advance the art of how people live and for environmental, social, economic reasons in a better way, I've learned to actually be more mindful of my audience. They need time to process. And one of the things I enjoy doing is through my travels, I do have the ability to actually encourage people to get involved and look at other examples. You know, I kind of tie the two together, my ability to travel a little bit with the educational side of what we're trying to do. People have been encouraging me to write, put this in a book. I will admit I've started on it. We'll see if I get it done. I enjoy reading a lot, and family is important to me, you know, and exercise. Other than that, I just really think I've been on this track for a long time, and I feel like it's important work, and I need to keep doing it. And as you said at the beginning, I'm not sure what I would do if I weren't doing this. So as long as the universe lets me.
Thanks so much for what you're doing. And certainly thanks for your time this morning. It's been a great conversation about all some of the aspects. We couldn't cover everything, but how you really, you're so deliberately bringing, you know, creating a culture, creating a community, and then addressing all of the resource issues of the day. So, Kurt, thanks for being on the podcast. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you, Ted, and thank you so much for what you do. This is really important, and I appreciate all the effort you put into getting involved with the people.
Good stuff. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.